The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This week on Unbox, I'm speaking with Tim Armu, an entrepreneur who has recently sold his business, FanBytes, for tens of millions of pounds.
When I then started FanBytes, I was like, minimum, I can sell this thing for 110 grand.
But his attitude towards business, life, and commitment has never changed.
Not everyone has to become an entrepreneur, but I think everyone should learn how to make money online. If you are 20 to 25 year old, that to me is mandatory.
We get into all of that today, and I promise that you will leave this episode more inspired than when you started.
There are people who are probably in very shitty situations who are thinking, why me? And actually, if you rephrase it and you go, this is going to be part of an epic story, that completely changes the way that you live your life.
Let's get into it with Tim. Tim, thank you very much for coming on Unboxed.
All good.
So, I have said we first met today in person, but I feel like I've known you for a long time. You've been building your company FanBytes for many years now, it feels, and you recently sold it for tens of millions. With that, though, comes a whole new set of challenges and things that happen in your life, both personally and professionally. And I want to get into all of that because I think your story is incredibly inspirational and you're someone I've looked up to for a number of years. So those who don't know, what happened? What is the story in a nutshell of FanBytes, of your success and of your exit, and then what's coming now for you?
The story starts in 2017. When I identified the rise of social media influencers, and I identified the fact that these guys were really the new TV for the younger audience. And as with anything, where there's a huge amount of audience, there is an opportunity for brands to want to tap into that audience. And so in my second year of university, I discovered that influencers were going to be the next big wave. Brands would want to be able to tap into that. How do we build a business which enables brands and marketers to be able to tap into that? And we started off being very much a software business. And then the government came and said, we want to give you 100 grand to run an influencer campaign, but we don't want to use your software. We want you to actually do all the work. And we said, we are not going to turn away 100 grand. We are now going to be an agency business. And so that then began FanBytes, which from 2017 to 2022, I took the company from zero to 75 people, working with everyone from Nike, Samsung, Deliveroo, the UK government. And then last year in May, we then sold the company for, as you say, tens of millions of pounds.
And what did it feel like to go from 2017 to now? Not a crazy amount of time, to be honest, right? I mean, obviously, various companies have different cycles and time spans, some are shorter than others. But you capitalize on this moment, you smashed it out of the park, and then you have this great kind of payoff at the end of it, which sort of just signposts this success that you've had. What did it feel like for you on that day?
I've spoken to a lot of other people who sold their companies, and they always say that actually for the first 3 to 6 months, you don't feel any different because it takes quite a long time to adjust to your new self. And so after 6 months or so, that was when I then became a lot more comfortable, I'd say, with, okay, you don't have to look at the prices of things. You don't have to freak out over things that really aren't that big a deal. But that took me quite a long time.
Mm. That's interesting. So tangibly, what does that mean? You say, you know, about things like prices.
Yeah.
But on a day-to-day level,
yeah,
what have you found to be the big differences between you when you're working or building your company and
yeah.
then you now having enough money in the bank to live for the rest of your life?
So I think the biggest thing is I don't operate from a position of fear anymore. I think before we sold the company, I made a lot of decisions out of fear. For example, I might not take a certain trip, even though I could afford it. It still felt to me like I was reducing the amount of potential money that I had. And so being able to adjust from thinking from fear to then thinking from an abundance perspective was quite a big thing. But the biggest thing for me is that it built enough evidence that I could be better. So I say this to a lot of young entrepreneurs, and I say, your first business, or rather like, do everything you can in order to just get a first win on the board. The first win doesn't have to be a huge win. It could just be enough evidence to show yourself that you can build a business, even if it's to 100 grand a year, 500 grand a year, even 50 grand a year, because then you become someone who has enough evidence to show that you can be better and do more. And so I think mentally, the biggest thing with the FanBytes acquisition was that I now had a reference point to say to myself, oh, wow, I did this. I took a company, I scaled it, I sold it. And so now I can go and do more impactful things.
Mm.
That was a big mindset shift for me.
Mm. Yeah, because you've, as you say, you've got your big win on the board, your first win on the board. Yeah. And I guess the key, and I'd imagine part of the adjustment is to say, all right, well, what's next?
Yeah.
How do I get another win on the board? How do I come back? And that's why you have founders who are restlessly coming back to the table to be like, right, I've done this.
Yeah.
Now I need to go again. You have 5-6 times founders. Once you've had that first win, I'd imagine psychologically you feel confident enough to go again.
Yeah. But I also think, so FanBytes was my first major win, but I'd actually had a win beforehand. So before FanBytes, which I started at 21, I started Entrepreneur Express at 17, which was like an online media publication. And that company actually got sold 11 months after I started it to a company in America called Horizon Media. The amount we sold it for was just 110 grand. Which is
17. It's not bad.
Exactly. But here's the thing. By selling a company at 17 for whatever the amount, I built enough evidence to say, Tim is someone who can build and scale and sell something at 17, even though it's not a huge amount of money. And so then by doing that, when I then started FanBytes, I was like, minimum, I can sell this thing for 110 grand, right? So I built enough evidence to then keep doing more and more. And so this idea of, I want my first thing to be a $1 billion company, I keep telling people that is the worst way to think about business, because your first business is probably going to flop. Your second business will flop less. Your third business will flop less than the second one. And then on like business number 5 or 6, you then go, oh, this is how it works. And I think that was very much an iterative step for me with FanBytes as well.
What was your world way before this?
Yeah.
And how did maybe some of the challenges of that time give you the resolve and the strength and some of the grit that you definitely need to make business work?
So there's probably two parts to this. The first one was my life before 10 years old and then my life after 10 years old. So I was born in Hackney, but then I went to live in Ghana for 10 years, just before I turned 3 months old, I got sent back to Ghana.
You were that bad. You were that badly behaved.
The actual reason for that is because my parents had a bunch of issues between them. And so it was either go to Ghana or go to foster care. And so there was that discussion there, and they said, right, we're going to send to Ghana to live with your grandma. And here's the thing. I used to hate the fact that I grew up in Ghana. I used to hate it because when I came to England, they'd be talking about TV shows and films that I have no clue what they're talking about. I still sometimes don't even, to this day, I don't know what like S Club 7 is, right? And so as a consequence of that, I used to hate the fact that I grew up in Ghana. But then as I got older, I came to realize it was probably the best thing that happened to me. Because it taught me immense discipline. For example, I never actually watched TV during the weekday in Ghana. It taught me there were consequences for your actions. I got lashed in Ghana when I was a bad kid. And that discipline and understanding consequences for your actions are actually quite foundational things for being an entrepreneur, being a successful entrepreneur. And so then I came here. I then lived in South London, Old Kent Road, with my dad. We lived on a fourth floor council estate in a pretty shitty part of town. Again, I hated the fact that I lived there. But because I hated it, it gave me this very visual and visceral desire to get out. And so that was actually the reason I then went in sixth form. I ended up going to a boarding school. And I got a scholarship to that boarding school, Christ Hospital. Now, the really interesting thing about going to boarding school is I actually had scholarships from other schools, day schools in London, that were way better. But I went to Christ Hospital because physically, I wanted to leave the ends. And just that decision there was quite a big game changer. Because I was getting to 16, 17, 18. It's generally the times that when you're surrounded by a lot of like gang life and all of that, it's at that point that generally
you make the choice.
You make the choice. And so by getting out of the situation, I didn't have to make the choice. And that would not have happened if I hadn't basically grown up on Old Kent Road. Because otherwise, I may have probably just gone along my day, done a day school, and not really felt this compulsion to become an entrepreneurial person.
Well, one of the biggest traits about being an entrepreneur and success in entrepreneurship, from my observation, is having your back against the wall. Yeah. And when you have your back against the wall, you often have to make a success. And many people do, and humans are capable of great things when they have that pressure. But without that pressure of, I need to make this work, often it's very difficult to find the resolve and the real passion, that digging deep to make a success. Right, let's get into some of your mindset and some of the ways that you think, because I think it's one thing that you share a lot online that is fascinating. You speak to a lot of young entrepreneurs. What's the number one piece of advice that you constantly have to give out because everybody doesn't get it?
The biggest piece of advice I give to young entrepreneurs is that if someone else has done it, you can too. There are a lot of self-sabotage frameworks we tell ourselves. This person is different because of this. This person is different because they are white. This person is different because they're male. This person is different because they grew up in Chelsea. This person is different because they went to a private school. But actually, business and wealth is really just a game of inputs. If you just do the same inputs that someone else has done and you trust the process, you will get the outcome. When I started FanBite, I thought, right, we're now going to build an agency style business. Let me look at all the other people who have done well in an agency style business. Let me study what they did. And I'm just going to do those things.
What were some of those things out of interest?
One was they picked a very specific niche. So for example, FanBite and the CEO of influencer companies focused on being a Gen Z company. Number two, they focused a lot on marketing to bring customers in rather than building a huge sales team and then going ahead. And then number three, the ones who are sold for actually quite a high multiple introduced technology as a way for them to save cost. Rather than us scaling and having a huge amount of people in the company, we also introduced technology. And all of that is not something that I just sat in my bedroom and I thought about. I thought, oh, they've done that, they've done that, they've done that. We're going to do that and we should get the same outcome.
We live in a world of blueprints, right?
Yeah.
There are so many people that have come before us who are infinitely more intelligent and capable than we all are. Follow them. There is no shame in following the way that others have succeeded. And actually, is there really any such thing as being truly original? Why do you need to be? Ultimately, if the same problems repeat themselves in different times, in different climates, you know, an agency model has been around for however long, you find, you know, that is a clear, trusted model of value. You apply it to the way that society has changed through social media and you get the outcome that you want. You're not reinventing the wheel.
I think it's Oscar Wilde who said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And I think that is the biggest truth in business. Everything you're trying to do has been done by someone else. Your job as an entrepreneur is study how they've done it, apply it to your industry, and then profit.
Yeah, and bring yourself to it, right? I think the other thing that gets overlooked often is that you, as a, for example, your personal brand,
yeah,
the way that you've injected yourself into your business,
yeah,
helped massively. I watched that journey and I saw it hands down. It helped massively with the whole output that you ended up getting because,
yeah,
you injected yourself. Yes, there are many other social media agencies out,
yeah,
there,
yeah,
But there's only one you, right?
Yeah.
Same way there's only one of me and what we're doing or whatever. So you are 100% unique, and that's a difference maker in your business, which no one else can replicate.
What's interesting actually about both of us is that we are children of the social media generation. And often something I say to a lot of young entrepreneurs is, you are in such a golden age. Because how old are you?
30? 26.
26. Okay, well, there you go, right? And I'm 28. We are in this weird age where we remember a time when there was dial-up internet. But we also remember a time when it just transitioned to the world that we're in now.
Mm.
And as a consequence, you start to go, wow, the world has fundamentally changed and the opportunities are insane. And so I'm going to say something that's going to be controversial. But I believe that if you are between 20 to 25 years old and you want to build a business, there is no excuse for you to be poor. Because you have all the tools, you have all the information, you have all the platforms, you have everything that you need. And all you need right now is focus and discipline to see something through and not compare yourself to someone else's year 5 or year 10 and just focus on your own race.
I hear that and I agree. I think I was saying this in an interview recently, right? That, you know, there's no excuse to not have knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's the building blocks, right? You said you studied people who came before you, you studied other agency models, other agency founders, you saw the model, then you applied it to your own skill set, your own value proposition. There is no excuse in this day and age to not at least know, because we have the internet, we have YouTube, we have so many free resources, which will give you everything you could ever need. The world of business, the amount of money that people would have spent on the education that we now get for free online, but so many young people don't take advantage of it. I think it is the biggest missed opportunity. And that's the point as well. When you have all of this information, when you have all the content in the world, that can lead you the other way. It can lead to self-indulgence. It can lead into a subjective worldview, which means that you don't take accountability. You don't, you know, place yourself in the driving seat, and you assume that the world around you is dictating your life rather than you being in control. When actually that's a complete mindset switch in my mind. You can take control now more than ever before. And I get it, from 20 to 25, this age group right now, you have everything at your fingertips and everyone has a phone. There is no excuse to not at least have knowledge.
Yeah.
And then to apply that knowledge to make money, yes, that's 100 times easier than it's ever been.
Yeah. I think not everyone has to become an entrepreneur, but I think everyone should learn how to make money online. And I think those two are very different. There's this pressure to be an entrepreneur, build a business, sell a business. You don't really need to if you don't really want to. But understanding how to sell stuff online, understanding how to build audiences online, understanding how to target an audience and then sell through copy and video and images. If you're a 20 to 25 year old, that to me is mandatory.
Mm. Yeah, in terms of compulsory education, that's the highest value education you could possibly give people.
That is.
I completely agree. And I think most young people know it, right? They have an instinctive understanding of how to share themselves online because that's all they've ever known. Our generation were the first to come into that, but it was new. This generation is just bread and butter. It's what they've always...
Yeah.
Their parents have been doing this. You know what I mean? It's entrenched. So the opportunity to apply that skill, which is really sharing yourself online, personal branding, which actually a lot of young people do have it instinctively, whether they know it or not.
Yeah.
To apply that to yourself from a financial and a business perspective is a gaping opportunity that people don't, I think, often see.
Yeah.
Right. So you say about making money online. I think you're completely right. What are the ways that you would make money? If you were, let's say you're an 18-year-old kid right now and you are at uni and you're about to go to uni, you're in your last summer before everything changes for you and you go into the system.
And I'm
thinking the dreaded system, and you're thinking, I need a way out. This was me, right? I was like, I need a way out of this. What would be your advice to that 18-year-old in terms of how they can make money online and find knowledge to build themselves a life for themselves?
So if I'm an 18-year-old right now and I'm thinking about how to make money online, there are two main things I need to consider. Number one, is there an emerging trend that's going on that I can surf the wave of? And then number two, how can I help people make more money from that trend? Those are really my only two considerations. The reason why the first one is important is because you need some kind of catalyst which can build a lot of demand, because really business is about serving that demand. And then number two, the reason why it's about helping people make money from it is because I do believe the best businesses either help people make money, save money, or save time. And so if you can do something that helps people to make a pound, and then you're taking a percentage of that pound, and you just do that at scale, that's a business. Mm. And then tied with that is very important to not set expectations too high. And this sounds very counterintuitive. I tell a lot of young entrepreneurs, you should set low goals. The reason you should set low goals is because your first business just needs to be something that teaches you the skill of business, not something that makes you immensely wealthy. And the problem is, on social media, you have a lot of people, 99% of them are bullshitters, who say, I started this at 14 and then now I have a mega mansion and a Porsche and all of these things. And then you look at it and you go, oh, well, I'm not there yet, so I'm not going to try. And I think that is one of the biggest damages to our society right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. And do you think how do you break the culture of comparison? Because we live in an age where everybody is comparing themselves constantly. And you've probably found this, right? When you were running Fanbytes and you're looking at another agency and you're going, okay, so how do you defeat that? Like, what are some of the things that you've put in place for yourself to stay focused on your own goals?
I think the biggest thing I've done to avoid comparison is to constantly tell myself that I am enough. I started doing this in the second year of Fanbytes, because I would compare myself to even someone like Lad Bible. And I'd go, man, these guys are the biggest. These guys are the best. And I'd be really annoyed, because I'd go, maybe we should now start to own audiences rather than, you know, being the technology layer. But then I kept telling myself, actually, I am enough. The thing I'm doing is enough. The other thing that I think about comparison is there will always be someone who has it worse than you, and there'll always be someone who has it better than you. And so if you internalize that, you then realize that you never actually truly be the best, because there will always be someone richer, better looking than you, taller than you, whatever. But also there'll be someone who you are richer, better looking than, taller than, funnier than. And so if you just focus on yourself as an individual, that's the way that you'd be able to navigate that. But the truth is, it is nearly impossible for you to not compare yourself, because as human beings, we are adapted to constantly compare, because our frame of references, are they going to be stronger than me to get the food? That's just something that has been dated back for years, decades, centuries, centuries. Human beings always compare themselves to see who really is the alpha. But with a lot of mental coaching, with a lot of thinking through, with a lot of self-acceptance to say you are enough, that can actually go quite far.
And it's interesting you say you repeated that to yourself, right? So I'm not massive on the affirmations, that kind of stuff. But there is naturally a strength to habitually reminding yourself. We're creatures based on habits, right? Good habits or bad habits, vices, virtues. Habitually reminding yourself that you are enough and that you are content with how you are, with the things that are outside of your control that make up your life, with the things that make up your personality, that those things are good and they are you. Because ultimately, as we said, right, there's no two of you. So you can always compare based on materialistic things and everything else, but substantially, you are one of one. And being content with that, I think, is really important for people, especially when they get into business and they're surrounded by success, they're surrounded by comparison. How do you focus on being the best you can possibly be rather than trying to be other people?
There will always be a bigger game. I was hanging out with a friend of mine who had just sold his company for $130 million. Said, wow, you must be so excited. Said, yeah, but insert this other person here. So their company for $200 million. That's the next go. And I just stopped him and I looked at him. I said, do you realize where you came from? And do you realize where you are now? And do you realize that the 18-year-old you, if they saw you now, they would be absolutely freaking out. They wouldn't believe it's real.
And they'd slap you for making that comparison.
They'd slap you for making that comparison. So accept where you are now and accept that there will perpetually be more. But think about where you've come from and where you are now and really enjoy that.
What are the biggest problems with young people today?
I think the biggest problem with Gen Z is that they compare their year ones to other people's year tens. Because of TikTok, because of Twitter, because of YouTube, when you open up any of those apps, you are just in a constant comparison vortex. And that then is the thing that drives anxiety, depression, because you feel like you're not doing enough. And if you think about older generations, a lot of them did not have this constant comparison vortex. And so that is why generally issues around anxiety and self-worth and depression were lower.
And also I think people being so sucked, not just into a comparison vortex, but into a content vortex that just sucks up people's time, overstimulates people to such a degree, you know, sent almost people's expectation of just even experience in the present moment when they're entirely online just becomes so heightened because everything's so sensory. People need to go outside. Gen Z need to go outside, need to connect. And people are struggling so much with anxiety and everything else. Also a lack of purpose, a lack of greater, deeper things than just the material. There's such a materialistic world out there now more than ever. Obviously, TikTok and social serves that to such a heightened extent. And young people, I think, are so materially absorbed because they don't know a world outside of that. It's all they've grown up in. They have no sense of anything spiritual. They have no sense of anything deeper than just that layer which they're served, and they are serving themselves every single day. And I think there's no way that that cannot have a negative impact on people, and I think we're seeing that.
I think, again, I'm going to say something semi-controversial, but I don't believe people need a purpose. I genuinely do not believe that people need a why and a deeper reason to do things. I never really had a burning purpose, a reason that I thought I was put on this earth. I just defined it at different points. So, well, at this point, I think this is what interests me the most, so I'm going to do it. At this other point, I think this is what interests me the most, and I'm going to do it. And that constantly changed. I do believe that a lot of anxiety comes from people thinking that they need a purpose. Actually, tied with this, one of the worst pieces of advice I got from a billionaire friend of mine was follow your passion.
I hate that advice. I think it's the worst piece. I completely agree with you.
Follow your passion is
should
be thrown in the bin. The reason why people say follow your passion is that it sounds good, and it also puts a lot of romanticism around life. But actually, you should just follow your efforts. Because the problem with follow your passion, fundamentally, is that it's actually self-sabotage, because you then avoid doing things because you say, if I don't enjoy it, I'm not going to do it. And that thing could end up being the thing that is going to provide you with a huge amount of personal growth and professional development. And so by basically saying, well, it's something I'm not passionate about, so I'm not going to do it, you're sabotaging your future you. And so as a consequence of that, you have a lot of Gen Zers and millennials in the workforce or in the world who are struggling with self-worth because they don't believe they found their passion. When really it should be focus on skill acquisition, focus on your effort. And as a consequence of being good at certain skills and being rewarded for those skills, you will then enjoy those things. Because as we all know, people don't quit things they're good at. So if you just focus on being good at things, you get rewarded for it. You're not going to quit it. And then eventually 10 years down the line, what then happens is people give talks and they say, I became successful by following my passion. But no.
You became passionate about something you're good at. 100% agree. And there's a deeper, much deeper, more expansive history of subjectivism and why once we sort of tune out of anything objective and we become so inwardly led and emotionally driven as people, which is what's happened over the last 500 years, we get to a stage now, which is kind of a climaxing of that, where you're in a world in which people only follow what makes them emotionally feel good. And by following what feels good, you often make terrible choices because you are implicitly saying you trust your feelings.
Mm.
But trusting your feelings is also not necessarily true, because we are flawed, fallen human beings who have a lot of weaknesses, and we will always follow what's essentially appetizing and what makes us feel good, but that can also lead to destruction. And, you know, drugs, overextension of alcohol, too much of anything, really, food, makes us feel good to a point. But it makes us feel good. We follow those things. It can lead to destruction, and it does for so many people. And it's the same goes for the world of work. If we purely follow what makes us feel good, we will end up in terrible situations, but also we won't become good. We minimize, as you say, self-sabotage. We minimize our potential because we don't ultimately follow things that maybe are difficult and are hard, but that's where you're going to get rewarded long term, because you might overcome, become incredible at doing something that may be really boring. I always say this, who starts in sales because they're passionate?
Yeah.
I've never met anybody who becomes a real estate agent because they're passionate.
Deeply passionate about property. I just love buildings.
Yeah, it's just, I love selling people flats. Surveying. No, you become, or accountants. Who becomes an accountant because they're passionate about accounting? No, but you know, you meet many accountants and many real estate agents and many, pick a boring job, who become passionate at 40, 50 years old because they have had an incredible career.
Yeah.
And they've become amazing at it.
Yeah.
And that's what we should follow, skills. Where are you good? Follow that, because you'll become passionate about that in the long term.
If I could have a billboard in the middle of London, it would say two things. It would say, number one, fuck your feelings. And then number two, it would say, get good at doing hard things. Because both of those two things actually will expose you to new experiences, which will develop you professionally.
And, you know, the traditional adage is that, you know, maturity and growth comes from two tenets, suffering and responsibility.
Mm.
That's historically understood. We live in a time when that's completely gone. People don't see things in a really traditionally religious context. They don't see things from a spiritual perspective, and they don't understand that grit and suffering is what makes us alive. And it also gives us meaning, purpose. And, you know, to your point on having, in a work sense, purpose and goals. I'm not, for example, somebody who says I want to be here in 5 years' time and so on. Again, like you say, follow your efforts. But having a continuous desire to do difficult things and persevere through those things and then come out the other side, that is what gets me fired up in whatever it is. And I think that's the mindset which a lot of young people need to start building. And that come, but I will say, I've started seeing a slight movement back into it. It's natural for us to want to overcome, right? It's inbuilt within us, historically speaking. But I have started to see a movement towards that again. Things like the ice baths. Things like cold showers. Things like, you know, people like Wim Hof, really, you know, David Goggins. Even Hardest Geezer, right? People are really attracted to a little bit of grit because there's so little of it in the world today.
As you were talking, I was thinking about what you do and the work you do with the Sidemen. And you said this year is going to be like their 10th year together, right? Think about that. 10 years in the game as a group of people with their dynamics, with their personalities, and they're still just at it. They're still doing big things. And it's so easy to quit nowadays. It's so easy to quit. And the fact that they've just been so consistent. They did great videos, they did bad videos. Some videos worked, some videos didn't. Some projects worked, some didn't. But just consistently over such a long period of time, they are where they are now. And they're just a huge example, huge testament to the fact that just by not quitting something so early, you can get to a position that people would dream of.
There's this chart, right? You'll have seen it. Very famous graph which shows, you know, time, and then it's got a thing, and then it's got like, you know, movement of growth, and you've got like a little arrow saying, oh, what's the point, it's worthless. And you know, and then after a long period of time it shoots.
Yeah.
And I think all of us can see that in our own lives, right?
Yeah.
You know, we felt that we're fanboys.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, this isn't working. And actually, if you quit then,
yeah,
you wouldn't be here now.
Yeah.
And so for me, my biggest thing, it's like even with this show, with the podcast, my big theory on any of these things, anything really in this world, is if you're delivering value and you're delivering it over enough time, it will connect and it will work. But you have to be willing to put the time in and go that distance, because that distance is the hardest bit. It's so easy to be like, you know what, this video didn't get a lot of views, or you know, this thing's cost X or whatever it might be, but actually the distance is what makes you.
Yeah. I had a journal when I started FanBytes, and I discovered it 2 months ago. And I had written, I'm starting this business, and in 2 years, we're going to sell it to Snapchat for 1 million, and then I would now have all my business success. And I wrote that at the beginning, and I said, this journey will take me 2 years, easy peasy, done and dusted. And I look back at that, and I think how naive I was. But also, what would have happened if I'd just said, well, it's not going to happen in 2 years, now I'm out. There's so many waves, there's so many things that we would have missed out on. So as you say, it's the distance that makes a difference.
Mm. I mean, you look at the big successes. LaBible is a good example, right? Obviously, yeah. You know those guys very well, worked there for a couple of years and was in a really interesting pivot point in that business. And they obviously went public, had a lot of success. They materialized the journey. That's a 10-year journey.
That is so, like, when Ari tells me about it, like, bro, 10 years is such a long time to do a business in the social media space.
Yeah.
Because it's like every week there's a new algorithm change, there's a new thing, there's a new that. So to do it for that long, consistently, and to show up when there's competitors who are trying to eat your lunch, when there's brands who don't want to work with you, when there's all these different changes, and then to consistently keep doing it, I'm like, wow, well done.
And think about the days that have gone into that business, the hours, and then you go, okay, you've hit your 10,000. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, that's the difference. And you're so right about, I loved your point around day one and day 10. This generation only see day 10s, or year 10s even, sorry. But they only see the end result.
Yeah.
And then they think, oh, well, how do I get here tomorrow? And the reality is, you look at the real success stories, you look at some of the best and greatest entrepreneurs of all time, they grinded for decades.
Yeah.
And then you see the success that is now going viral online.
Yeah.
But the reason it's going viral is because it's exceptional, because they've grinded for decades. Yeah. And that exceptional success takes time. And takes time of with real commitment and grit and determination. And maybe young people are sort of attracted to that content because it's almost a virtue that's lacking in this generation, that they're like, oh, you know, I can see somebody who's committed to something and is committed for a long period of time, and I'm drawn to that. Maybe that's why a lot of these things go viral and do well, because it's so rare these days.
The other thing that's also interesting, and I know we've been talking a lot about hard work and effort, and that's true. But I think even more important than hard work is actually what you choose to work on. You can have two people who work insanely hard. You can have someone who starts a online business and then someone who starts a bakery. And they both work the same amount of hours. In fact, probably the baker works even harder. But the outcome would be way more for the person who started an online business just because of scale and leverage. And so the other thing that I think is an advice to a lot of budding entrepreneurs is, before you really start putting in the work, think very clearly about what you're working on. Because what you don't want to do is to have level 10 amount of effort in a level 2 opportunity. When you pair up the opportunity and the effort is where you become really successful. And actually in this online world, most things are a level 10 opportunity.
There's no ceiling.
There's no ceiling. And so really, the only thing that is the distance between where you are and where you want to be is just the effort. Because now every opportunity is a 10. So now make sure your effort is a 10.
I think that's really good advice. I was on a call and recently met a founder of, he makes like protein bars. Very successful, doing well. But he said, you know, focus on the US. That's his, that he's just focused on the US. Mm. For this exact reason, he said that building a business is hard enough. You may as well build it in an environment that delivers the biggest opportunity. Because if you're making protein bars and you're getting stocked in Walmart, Target, Trader Joe's, a light order is more than the entire UK. So stop building already a challenging job. The hardest job in the world is being, well, one is making businesses and making them work. Do it with the biggest opportunity at hand. I think that's, and I think it echoes exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right, we've got a game.
Okay.
We've got a game. So there in this box are a number of cards. Make sure they're the right way. I want you, please, to pick out a card from the box. Tell me what's on it.
Yeah.
And then say what comes to mind.
Okay. Oh, this is funny. This is... This is great. This is a picture of me when I was the editor-in-chief of my school magazine, and I am wearing glasses that I don't actually really need, and I have these big headphones. The first thing that comes to mind is actually a change of identity. So when I was younger, 16, 17, I really wanted to become a journalist. I was really interested in media. And so what I then decided to do was take on the persona of what a journalist would be. And so they wore these square glasses. I got square glasses. And I also noticed that they tended to have these kind of like big over-the-ear headphones. And so I then went to get some. And there's a real lesson here, actually, which is if you want to be a certain thing, it is completely fine to change your identity to then be that person. Because if you engulf your mind, you engulf yourself into that new person, the outcomes won't actually happen. This is good. This
Very
is funny.
Good. Great. Right. Next one, please.
Another one?
Yeah, yeah.
This
is good. Going. That's funny.
Ah, yes. This says, your first will always be bad. Your first video will be bad. Your first pitch will be bad. Your first run will be bad. Your first product will be bad. Your first podcast will be bad. Your first speech will be bad. But your 100th will be great. So start now is the quickest path to being great.
Facts.
Facts. This is my life doctrine. When you start anything, you will be bad because you have not done it before.
And that's the point.
And that's the point.
Yeah.
And if you don't give it 100 enough goes to say whether you're good at it or whether you enjoy it enough to spend more time being good at it, you will not be good at anything.
And you definitely won't be great.
Definitely would not be great. Ah, this is the picture we put up when we sold the company. Goes, what a week of celebrations has been. Swipe for the story. 6 years ago, Ambrose Cook, Mitchell Fasania, and I decided to build a business together whilst in university. We stumbled our way into building an incredible company which made a huge dent in the influence industry. Last week, we announced Fanbase had been acquired. We built an amazing team of winners and people who love what they do. The last picture is where I grew up on the fourth floor of a council estate on Oaken Road. It's a reminder that regardless of where you start, you are in control of where you end. I love this picture. And the final line there, it's a reminder that regardless of where you start, you are in control of where you end.
Mm.
I think one of the most impactful things is when you realize that you in 5-10 years is directly a result of what you do now. And that could either be very scary or could be incredibly liberating. I find it incredibly liberating because that means, you know, I'm currently 28. Me at 32, if I just do stuff now, I impact that person at 32. Same way growing up, Council Estate, Oaken Road, I was like, well, if I focus on business, if I focus on being better at sales and marketing, the person in 5 years is going to be a better sales and marketing person, a better entrepreneur. So let me do the work now and the outputs will take care of themselves.
And as you say, it's a game of inputs.
It's a game of inputs. It is a game of inputs.
The more you do, the more will come out the other end.
100%. This is Richard Branson. Richard Branson played a pivotal part in my life and he doesn't even know it yet. So when I was 17 and I ran Entrepreneur Express, Richard Branson, James Caan, and Alan Sugar were speaking at a conference. And I really wanted to get backstage to interview them. They were speaking at this conference where all the major press were there, but I was a small-time media publication. So I thought to myself, how could I get to interview these guys? And I realized that people are driven by ways you can help them. So then I emailed the organizer of the conference, Vishal, and I said, I will come the day before and I will lay out all the chairs for your conference. And all I ask is that you give me a press pass so I can interview these guys. And Vishal said yes. And a few days afterwards, I went to the conference. It was in the Excel Arena. And I was just like laying out all the chairs. It was so many chairs, but I was.
Did you realize it was in the XL? Because that is a lot of chairs.
That is a lot of chairs.
It's a big venue.
And I was incredibly excited because I was like, yes, I am going to be interviewing these guys. It taught me a very interesting lesson though, which is you can get anything that you want if you help other people get what they want. And I could have just stopped and said, well, I'm not a big enough press partner, so I'm not going to get it. But I thought, what does he want? Well, he wants a very smooth operation. He wants to save costs, so he doesn't have to pay someone else to do the chairs. I'll do it for free, and everybody wins.
One last question. So, you at... You in 2017, how old are you in 2017? You're 28, so that's what, 6 years now?
22.
Yeah. What would you say to your 21-year-old self, knowing what you know now, to inspire them at 21, the day you start FanBytes?
I would say to my 21-year-old self that even though you have a lot of self-doubt and you are questioning whether you can do it, the fact that you are willing to constantly learn and improve every single day and admit your fault is the reason why you're going to be successful.
Tim, man, thank you very much for coming on Unboxed. So that was Tim. What an incredible individual, an amazing and, as he says, extraordinary story, and somebody who I really do find to be super inspiring. He has always done incredible things in this space. I've been following him for the last 6-7 years, and to see him get this incredible moment where everything comes to its payout, to its conclusion for FanBytes, is great to watch. Hopefully you got a lot from this episode. I definitely did, and we will see you again next week. So make sure to like, comment and subscribe. We'll be back on Wednesday.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.